morning. Welcome to another edition of She Persisted here on the Progressive Voices Network. My name is Melissa Carter. If this is your first time here, welcome. If you found us on the Progressive Voices free app that you can download, thank you. If you found us on iTunes, thank you. ShePersistedShow.com is the website. Just a quick follow-up on my birthday. When we talked last week, I had not yet gone to dinner with my son. So that was the finale of my birthday. I had spent the weekend with friends, had dinners, went to go see Captain Marvel, which is great. I'll talk about it in a second. The last thing I did for my birthday was go to dinner with my son. His grandmother, Katie's mom, brought him and we met for dinner. And the gift that he got me was one, if not my favorite gifts ever. Ever. He plays t-ball now. We were on our way to a t-ball game a few weeks ago. We were riding in the car with Katie, my baby mama. I was teasing him about what he's going to get me for my birthday because I was trying to explain to him that, you know, birthdays are not, he knows his birthday. But I was like, other people, for their birthdays, you give them gifts because he's old enough now to get these concepts. I was teasing him about what he's going to get me, making him laugh. He was asking me what my favorite train was because that's all he's about is trains. So he's going to get me my favorite train, which is very sweet. And then I said toward the end of the conversation as an afterthought, look, honey, I love homemade gifts. I really do. It's inexpensive and it comes from effort. Homemade gifts are, you know, someone is thinking about you as they're making it. I love those. I said, just color me something, draw me something. That's a perfect birthday gift. Well, obviously, Katie, who was driving, heard that conversation, made a joke about how she's not very crafty. It just went away. Didn't think much about it. And then when we went to dinner, his grandmother said, here's your gift. It was a book. Katie had not only just had him draw one picture. She made a book of our life together, meaning Mr. Carter's and mine. It was this little crafty homemade book with stickers and drawings, and it was by far, I believe, my favorite gift I've ever gotten. It was the sweetest thing. So kudos to Katie, because I know that took a lot of stress on her to do that, but just to go above and beyond, I was very surprised. It was very cool, and apparently my son was so excited that it was my birthday. So by the time I saw him, because, you know, Katie and I, we're no longer together, if you're new to the show. We have him every other weekend, and a few days during the week, we have divided it out equally. The weekend before my birthday, I didn't see him, and so I had not seen him in a couple days. And when I got to dinner, his grandmother let me know that he had been saying that, you know, telling everybody it was my birthday that day. Very cool to have my son old enough to be aware of all these things and to share that. I just wanted to follow up with that. That was a fantastic gift that he got me and very sweet. I believe I mentioned that I had sent my mother flowers this year for my birthday because usually I call her on my birthday to wish her a happy birthday because I've always said she's the one that did all the work that day. I'm getting all the accolades, which is awesome, but she's the one that put the work in. I always call her. Well, this year, she's 90. I'm just aware of the dwindling amount of birthdays I have with her. This year, I sent her flowers, and I think she was very touched. And I've shared that online on Facebook, Melissa Carter ATL, and I think a lot of people told me they either do that or they're going to start doing that. But I don't know about the tradition that Mr. Carter's going to have because I didn't give birth to him, and neither did Katie Jo because we had to use a surrogate. So I don't know, you know, what he's going to do. Now, I said I was going to talk about Captain Marvel. It was a great movie. It was better than I expected. And I think I was cautious about going because of the superhero fatigue. But I also think that there's always trepidation in figuring out how Hollywood is going to handle superheroes. At least I used to have that. But I think since Wonder Woman, I think Hollywood has figured out. And before Wonder Woman, there's been some great female characters long before Wonder Woman. But I think people have just kind of cried to Hollywood that we need stronger women in lead roles. And especially in these superhero roles, they have to be believably strong and tough and superhero-like. Because in the past, it would just be like, let's put a pretty woman in some kind of cute outfit, and that's going to be believable. And for women, it wasn't believable. Wonder Woman, which is DC, and Captain Marvel is Marvel Comics. They're competitors. You know, Wonder Woman came out, and that's a DC comic, and it was a really, really great movie. Marvel, who had not done, even though they've done the Avengers, and they've done Captain America, and they've done Iron Man, they've did all these things, and they've made so much money on these movies, but they had yet to put a female superhero out as the lead in a movie. And I'm sure that Wonder Woman put a lot of pressure on them, because it's like, you're doing great things, but hey, guess what? You're still not doing is putting a female superhero as the main character, because these guys in Hollywood assume that nobody's going to go see these movies. And Captain Marvel came out, is what I understand is the number one female-led movie of all time. It was great. It was exceeded my expectations. But the other thought I had while I was going to see it, obviously a lot of people have seen it. If we have these great characters, and Brie Larson does a great job and is believable as this tough superhero, and it explains in the movie, if you haven't seen it, every superhero has a backstory, as they call it. She wasn't always strong. So they show how she wasn't always strong. The way they handled it, I thought, was just so well done. And when you have stories like this that depict women as pulling themselves up from their bootstraps, so to speak, then I think that all women need to go see it. I really do. I think that you back up what you ask for. And if you're somebody that has asked for strong female role models in movies, and obviously we need those in drama and comedies, but there's more and more women on the screen, and there's more and more women in the lead on a screen. And the thing that frustrates me is when those movies don't necessarily top the box office. Usually, when a movie tops the box office in Hollywood, it's because women have gone to see it. That means women are not going to see movies with female leads all the time. And not every one of those is a good movie, but ladies have got to, when you see these come up and you see these go into the movie theaters, you got to go see it. You just got to go see it. You got to go check it out. You don't wait on reviewers, because I don't know very many female reviewers. That's the other thing that irritates me about Hollywood, is these reviewers, because they seem to have a lot of control in who goes to see what. One of my biggest pet peeves is Welcome to Marwen, which I thought was a fantastic movie, but because it got panned by reviewers, nobody went to see it. And I honestly don't know why nobody went to see it, because I thought it was going to be the big movie of the holiday, and it tanked. And once you see it on cable, I'm sure you'll think, oh, this is such a cute movie, I don't understand what the problem was. Well, it's because a reviewer said something, and everybody looks at reviews on whether or not they want to spend their money. Well, I'm here to tell you, if a woman is in the lead, go spend your money. Give it a shot. I mean, if it's $17 that you're going to blow because of a movie with a woman in it that wasn't as great as you wanted it to be, well, at least you spent $17 telling Hollywood, thank you for putting a woman in the lead. If a movie with a female lead doesn't do well, Hollywood sees that as, well, you don't want women in the lead. They're not looking at the details of the movie or the context of the movie or the casting of the movie. They're looking at it with a broad brush. Captain Marvel did great. Wonder Woman did great. Not concerned about those movies, but am concerned with this hesitation still, because I went to go see Captain Marvel on the Sunday of its opening weekend, which I thought was late, which was late for me. Normally I would go on Friday. When I shared the fact that I went to see it, I there were very few women I knew that went to see it. And it's like, guys, they're giving us what we want, so why are you not going out there to support it? some stories that I did see in this past week. And we'll start with a couple funny ones. I mean, it's not funny to the people that it affects, but some of these stories are just so ridiculous that it makes me laugh. We'll start in New Jersey, where a high school has now banned students from renting limos for prom. It's, you know, coming upon prom season. Kids are now starting to make their preparations. This school in New Jersey says, no, you cannot anymore ride to prom in a limo. And the reason is they want to provide a level playing field because they feel that poorer students who can't afford the limos are being left out. Second story comes out of Tennessee, where a woman says her homeowners association is fining her $100 because the heat from the engine of her car, her parked car, she was warming up the car, melted the snow underneath it in an obscene shape. I'm not kidding. And this is my home state of Tennessee. What the hell are y'all doing? It snowed. She went out to warm her car up. And when she backed out, apparently a phallic symbol was underneath her car. That neighbor, because we all have that neighbor, took a picture of what was left behind. She was fined $100. However, isn't that the case where she'd already pissed somebody off beforehand? That this was the final straw? I mean, because if they're literally, if the HOA is seriously wanting to give that fine, like, it's one thing to complain, but it's the other to actually fine her for it, that ridiculousness, then she did something else, right? I mean, I'm not saying that she certainly did not deserve that $100 fine, but it's so ridiculous that you got to be kidding me that they actually went through with it, that she did something to piss off the HOA. HOAs, that's the other thing. I'm about to move, and I just dread that because I currently live in a place where my HOA fee is, I believe, $25 a year, and that covers the summer block party cost. I don't have somebody driving around checking out my yard or somebody driving around and seeing how I painted something on my house. I mean, I think, no offense if you've been a part of the HOA, but seriously, I mean, they can get ridiculous, as in the case in Tennessee with the melted snow. All right, the last story that we all need to talk about, this Lori Loughlin, Felicity Huffman scandal. I admit that when I first saw it, I just laughed out loud. This is what you're getting in trouble for. How ridiculous. We see all these stories of all these men and the fraud and the scandals that they are a part of. And then here are a bunch of celebrity mothers who are part of a scandal to get their kids into college. I mean, obviously you've heard the story. If you have not, Lori Loughlin, Full House fame, and Felicity Huffman, who has done Oscar-winning movies, married to William H. Macy, and Lori Loughlin is married to Mossimo. If you've ever bought a Mossimo shirt in Target, that's her husband. He's a designer. Both of them are part of this ring, this fraud ring, where basically these rich families have gone to these prestigious schools like USC and some others that were listed, but USC in particular in the case of these actresses. And they have the school give them a break on tuition by giving them athletic scholarships, even though their children are not athletes. And it's a different bribe. It's basically considered a bribe that these families are paying these universities a bribe in order for the kids to get in. So it's not just a break on the tuition, because obviously they're paying a lot of money to bribe them. It's being able to be admitted into the school because these are prestigious schools and they're hard to get in. Higher admission requirements. Felicity Huffman, and now William H. Macy has not been indicted in this. But Felicity Huffman, who was married to William H. Macy, and you can't tell me he did not know this was going on, by the way. She donated $15,000 to a firm. So she used a middleman who was going to get her daughter into the school. But the big one is Lori Loughlin. So Felicity Huffman's a part of this. $15,000 was her fee. Lori Loughlin and her husband Massimo paid bribes of $500,000 to USC's crew team so that her daughter or daughters could get into USC as part of the crew team, even though they didn't row. They never rowed. Probably the only boat they've been in was a yacht. And so they're paying to get their kids who don't qualify for these prestigious schools in. And I laughed when I first heard it. And then the more I thought about it, yes, it pisses me off. And it pisses everybody off because it's like your kid didn't earn the right to go. But the bigger problem I have is our society really turning into the rich and the poor. Not that it always hasn't always been that way. But you've heard the term middle class all your life. You more than likely were part of the middle class. I was part of the middle class. And that's what makes has made our country different, is that there's been the in-betweeners like us who still have opportunities but don't have to deal with that shit. We see it, and we may be jealous of it, but there a strong middle class, is, you know, you probably heard ad nauseum politicians say, truly is the key to making sure the country doesn't dive into full corruption. When they talk about the shrinking middle class, I mean, we really are in danger of becoming this very thing where you pay to play. The athletic departments, the first reaction of the USC crew department and all these athletic departments are trying to defend themselves. I'm glad this has come to light. I'm sorry that it has to do with some of these. I mean, I had a huge crush on Lori Loughlin. But these white, overprivileged people, you have these dual income families. So it's not just that these actresses are making this money, it's because they're married to rich men too. These power couples who are white are using their influence in a negative way. They're trying to give their kids a leg up. And that's the other thing that fascinates me, is that even though they are rich, they are able to pay $500,000 to a school. Some people won't even make $500,000 in their lifetime, but these people are able to have just $500,000 sitting around to bribe the school with. And they feel that their kid is not going to be able to get a leg up in life by being rich. That's the other thing that fascinates me. They feel insecure about their daughter's future, and so they're going to these lengths in order for her to at least get the USC stamp on her diploma so that she can excel, when being the daughter of a famous actress and a designer is not enough for her to have a successful life. It's just greed. It's that greed. It's that losing touch with reality. It's that, you know, this. I've mentioned on the show about not being guilty, don't feel guilty because you make money. And I'm trying to change my relationship with money because of this stuff. Because, you know, if people make a lot of money, do they all turn into these people? If you're rich, do you end up turning into somebody that only exposes yourself to things that are, I don't know, that make you lose touch with reality again? I'm trying to think of another way to put that. But that's how I feel. Like, I don't want to lose touch of normal, regular people, because the majority of people in this country don't have $500,000 to be able to do that with. Don't make anywhere near $500,000 a year. And like I said, won't make it in their lifetime. So what is raising a successful child? And I am just fascinated. I remember when Mr. Carter was born. He was born in Oregon. He was born in a hospital that was pretty progressive, because I'm from Tennessee. I live in Georgia. I've been in Georgia almost 30 years. The South is not progressive in certain areas, as we know. And we were fortunate enough to have him born in Oregon because we used a surrogate. And I say fortunate enough because the Oregon hospital put both of our names on the birth certificate. We had no issue being gay in Oregon and having our son. Had we had him in Georgia, it would have been a different story. I know a couple in Tennessee where whoever gave birth to the child, they didn't use a surrogate, but whoever gave birth to the child had her name on the certificate and the other one had to adopt the child. And we didn't have to go through that. That's why when I tell friends that we honestly don't know who the biological mother of our son is because we put more than one embryo, we put both of our embryos in, put both of our eggs, and they were fertilized. They were fertilized by the same sperm. But we don't know who the biological mother of our son is. We really don't. And we were grateful that we didn't have to go through the adoption process because they would have tested to see at the time. And we just like the fact that we don't know. We'll eventually obviously find out, but we don't know. And if you're asking about like blood type and that kind of thing, well, they don't type baby's blood anymore in the hospital. The whole purpose of typing blood when we were kids was because the process took a while. It took time to find for whatever system they use to find out our blood type. And now that testing is instantaneous. So the reason that we had our blood typed was in case of an emergency. So they knew ahead of time what blood to get us. If Mr. Carter was in an accident, they could type his blood at the scene and know exactly what kind of blood he needs. Katie and I have two completely different blood types. Maybe that's when we find out, but we don't know who is the biological mother of our son. When we were at the hospital, we were about to leave. We've been there a couple days. We're scared to death to take this baby home. We asked the nurse if she had any advice because she'd seen this day in and day out. And her advice to us was just tell that boy that you love him and mean it every single day and he will turn out just fine. And every time I think of how to raise a good man, I think of those words that nurse said. Because giving a child a place to feel safe, a place to feel appreciated and loved, is the most important thing you can do for that child. And I understand that you want to give your child opportunities. I also believe that it's more important to pay attention to your child and see what they are naturally drawn to. I do not think that my son is a product of me. I do not think that he is someone who needs to be influenced by what I do for a living or what Katie does for a living. Neither one of us have aspirations for him to be in media or to do what Katie does. In fact, I'd be like, don't do it. Don't do it. I wouldn't even say don't do it. It's just whatever he's interested in. And it's not just what he says, because I hear people say, well, you know, he could say that he wants to play saxophone, then he ends up playing drums, then he ends up playing clarinet, and he's going to waste your money. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about pay attention to your child without them having to tell you. Watch your child. Just observe your child in their own environment from afar. And you'll be able to tell what your child likes and doesn't like, or what kind of activities they're prone to, or what kind of interest they have, or whatever it is. Your child is its own human being, its own person. Mr. Carter is, yes, he's my son, but he's his own man. He will always be his own man. And it's my job to make sure that that man is able to function in society. To get to the point where I'm so obsessed with status or the amount of money I have to the point that instead of paying attention to what his needs are and what he really wants, and if he wants to go to USC, to tell him that you have to earn your spot there. But to get to the point where I'm bribing somebody in order to teach my child that. For Lori Loughlin, you're so cute to me. For Summerland. I know she was in Full House, but Summerland. Cuteness. But for you and your husband, whose shirts I have bought, to teach your daughter or daughters, I believe there's more than one, that that's how you live, that if you make enough money, you can get anything you want because you bribe people, it's just really sad to me. And I hope to never get to that point. It goes back to relationship with money, that I want to be able to like money, because these are stories that make me not like money, where I should just not like the people who abuse their money. I came from middle class, but my parents came from poor. My father came from poor settings. My mother didn't, but she certainly was surrounded by it. To hear their stories, like, they're, you know, poor people may not be polished, but there's a lot of poor people who are some of the better people in our society. We still have this mentality that rich means legitimate and poor means discarded. I mean, the reason we're building the wall, if we build that wall, do you think it has to do with the fact that Mexico is such an evil place? Or do you think it has to do with the fact not only are they people of color, which is a factor, but they're poor, that they're desperate enough to cross the border? You know, the reason we don't talk about these immigrants coming from other countries besides Mexico is because a lot of these immigrants that come over are coming over because of work. They're coming over because of school. They're coming over because they're not poor. They're coming over because they're giving us something. But for some reason, we have this mentality that those who are trying to cross the border in the middle of the night with nothing but their clothes on their back because they're poor. I mean, I contend that money is the root of judgment more so than race and gender. Because I've always thought that you give any of these communities that you are prejudiced against money, and you give them status, and people won't be prejudiced anymore. They may be a little prejudiced, but they're not going to do anything about it because you're richer than them. So I believe that true power, especially in this country, is money. It's somebody who's poor. I mean, they could be poor and white. I mean, redneck, that's what everybody calls redneck. Poor white trash. I mean, there's terms for it. So even though you're white, you could be white and you could be a man. This big status symbol. But if you're poor, then all bets are off. I don't think we talk enough about how the way to really take away people's abilities is to make them poor. And there are, I think with these groups that we're prejudiced against, there have been efforts to make them poor and make them stay poor. And I think with the country of Mexico, I think the United States has tried for decades to make sure that that country stayed poor. Because I do believe that we have been involved in their politics and in their drug rings and all these things. We try to act like we're not, and we are, because it's made us protected by having a neighbor who's poor and they can't do anything against us. Money, money. You know, I want better for my son by wanting better for me, again, as a single mom, trying to make sure that we stay financially afloat, but also emotionally afloat. Is that inner turmoil when it comes to being, I don't want to be like that family. I don't want to get to the point where I'm so consumed with my own status that I ruin Mr. Carter's view of what's right and wrong. I mean, your parents. I mean, this was a crime. This is a crime as parents. It's just... And now I can't have a crush on you anymore. Thank you.
I'm David Pakman, host of The David Pakman Show on the Progressive Voices channel. Check out this clip from my show.
Okay, I've been looking forward to answering this week's audience questions. Let's get right into it. First one, hey, David, should Donald Trump replace Mike Pence as his running mate for 2020? This is an easy one. The answer is no. Pence is basically invisible. He has made himself transparent, even though the only way in which the Trump administration has been transparent is that if Mike Pence is in the room, he must be see-through because he's barely anywhere. So if you replace Pence and run with somebody else, you actually call attention to the fact that yet again, you're losing an important person and or you don't want him to be part of your second term, if indeed you're going to get one. It's also, from a strategy perspective, hard for me to imagine who would better serve Donald Trump in terms of helping him win, in the sense that Pence is from that creepy religious, social, conservative wing of the Republican Party, which Donald Trump needs help with. Not that he didn't win it in 2016, but it's one of the areas where he didn't do as well. And Pence is from that wing of the Republican Party. There's also just some kind of logistical awkwardness if you have Mike Pence, the vice president, at the White House while Trump is flying around campaigning with a different vice presidential candidate. The optics are weird and you sort of have to start to justify that. And in a way, Pence barely existing outside of what will be the vice presidential debate in the 2020 election is probably a good thing and something you don't want to call more attention to by saying, I don't want him running with me and I'm going to pick someone else. Trump has so many different scandals and chaos and different things going on that Mike Pence requiring no attention whatsoever and getting no attention is probably a good thing. And like stepping back for a second from the specific dynamics with Trump, like, okay, Trump has the problem of just massive turnover, people that have quit, people that he's fired. So there's sort of like an acute need not to have that. In general, you don't dump your vice president when you're running for re-election unless they've really, really screwed up or the vice president genuinely doesn't want to run and they're saying, I need out, I need you to find somebody else. This is not the type of thing where Pence could just disappear with no blowback. There would be political repercussions. It's an expenditure of political capital. And the other issue would be if you're thinking that Pence is in some way going to hurt Trump merely by being there. I just disagree. I've seen no evidence of that. Trump seems to have this base that is sort of locked in. We've talked before about how there are roughly 20% of voters who would always, no matter what, vote for the Republican, 20% who would always, no matter what, vote for the Democrat, and 60 that may be persuadable, although they tend to vote one way or the other. That may be wrong. There's probably more partisanship than that math suggests. But with Trump, it's extra bad. I mean, Trump seems to have an immobile base of 35% that, if anything, is emboldened every time Donald Trump does something stupid or makes some kind of gaffe or geopolitical embarrassment or whatnot. So I just don't think that there's a risk of someone saying who's otherwise going to vote for Trump, I will only vote for him if he gets rid of Pence. So I can't think of anything, even steelmanning possible arguments for replacing Pence. I just can't think of any reason it would make sense. Wouldn't be a good idea. Can't imagine that Donald Trump is going to do it, despite that time when he was asked about, is Pence officially running with you? And he said, well, we actually haven't officially discussed it. And people started reading into it. I would not be holding my breath for it. And I don't think that there's really much to be gained or lost one way or the other with Mike Pence staying there. The guy's just invisible.
You've been listening to part of The David Pakman Show on the Progressive Voices channel. For full audio and video podcasts, interviews, and more, go to davidpakman.com and check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/The David Pakman Show.
Ever really think about what ideas can do? Well, then you realize the size of the thinker does not determine or even limit the size of the idea. Well, that's what my children's book is all about. It's called Whale of an Idea. And if you need a gift for a baby shower or a birthday, I would love for you to consider it. Whale of an Idea, available now online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Just a quick reminder to women of taking care of yourselves. There is a new statistic that came out just before International Women's Day earlier this month talking about the fact that women will not call an ambulance for themselves when they have a heart attack. Heart disease is the number one cause of death in women. We're all so focused on cancer, as we should be, but we have not focused on the fact that women die of heart attacks and it kills more women than cancer does. And sometimes the symptoms are different for a heart attack, but also because women have dealt with pain their whole lives because of their periods. We have been introduced to body aches far sooner than men, which is why I do think men are babies when they get sick and do take it to an extreme, because they, obviously they have not developed much pain tolerance, consistent pain tolerance. Maybe they can tolerate tough pain for a second, but but that slow ache every day, they just can't take. So for women, if it's a dull pain, maybe that's why they ignore themselves. But this article, and this is a study done in Poland, and this is an article in Science Daily, it was talking about how women will call an ambulance for men, and they will call an ambulance for their sons and their fathers and their brothers, but they won't call an ambulance for themselves. You got to take care of yourselves, ladies, and you got to get yourself checked as well. And you've got to go to the doctor often, which I know most women tend to keep their appointments up and tend to keep their mammograms up and tend to keep their colonoscopies up at a certain age and go to the doctor. Heart doctor is somebody that should be in your repertoire as well. I have a heart doctor on my team because my mother had a heart attack. My father had a heart attack. Both survived theirs. In all this that I was doing with my kidney and my transplant, I was like, I had not even thought about my heart. Just make sure you take care of yourselves and not just take care of the people around you, and don't be so stoic that you can be vulnerable. And if you have any symptoms that just doesn't seem right, symptoms of chest pain, obviously you should pay attention to that. Jaw pain, neck pain. I've heard other women talk about how their heart attack pain was in a different spot. If something is irregular, just this doesn't make any sense and it seems intense, or it seems that it is staying when it shouldn't, you know, just why not go to the doctor and just have them check it out? And we also have to be more diligent about doctors making sure they know the symptoms and taking care of women. Women in healthcare is not just about your breast, it's not just about your ovaries, it's about the rest of your body. I'm going to discuss a pet peeve of mine, and it's going to be something that's going to hit on the nerve of some people, make it a little prickly for some people, but it's about Christianity. My background is Christianity. I was born into a Christian church, raised in a Christian church, was very active in the Christian church, was in the choir, didn't sing very well. Probably lip-synced far more than I should have, so there's a confession there. But I was in youth group my whole life. I was part of the national youth organization of my church. I was a youth leader at one point, so I was very, very active in the Christian church. So I'm coming from a place I know full well. My father was a leader in the church. My sister has been a leader in the church. I'm not coming from a place of ignorance. But I do have a pet peeve when it comes to Christianity, and that is this idea that you separate yourself from what you don't agree with. The Christian ideal is that you bring into the fold things that make you uncomfortable because you're supposed to love everybody and everything. That is the doctrine. That is the scripture that, at least New Testament, which is you love your neighbor. You love your neighbor. Somehow that has been interpreted as you love your neighbor who's just like you. There's several reasons I'm bringing this up, but the first is a story, and I wish I could see where Buffalo, New York, Canisius College, I hope I'm saying that correctly. There's a 19-year-old there named Emily, and basically she came out as a lesbian, and her parents completely disowned her. And so friends had to go to a GoFundMe page in order for her lifestyle, her college, to be continued. So the girl is in college and her parents completely disown her because she came out as gay. And I guarantee that has everything to do with religion. Everything to do with religion. My experience growing up is I'm going to give kudos to my parents because they were true Christians when it came to my sexuality. I was scared to death to come out to them because of everything I'd heard and seen thus far, which was people being rejected by their parents because they're gay, because their parents are like, you were going to hell. And somehow, again, these Christian parents have decided to separate themselves from their own child because they're separating themselves from what they don't believe in because they're Christians. Now, certainly other religions feel the same way too, but I'm just focusing on Christianity because that's where I came from and that's where a majority of this country is based in. My experience was I finally came out, and when I came out to my father, who was the devout of the family, and I said, you were the one that I was afraid to talk to the most because of your religion, our religion, because I was still in the church at the time, just coming out of it though. And he said, Jesus would never reject you, so why should I? And I contend to this day that is the most Christian thing I've ever heard in my entire life from a true Christian who followed the example that he was given. But that is not the case with a lot of Christians. So I was behind a car in traffic the other day that had, on display so many stickers. And this is not just because they're Christian stickers. If somebody has 10 and 12 stickers in the back of their car, it's almost like, okay, I get the point. You're a fan of this band. You are a believer in this politician. You are whatever it is. It screams at you when you have stickers all over the paint of the car, the bumper of the car, the window of the car. Disney, seen that? This particular car had all kinds of stickers on it praising Jesus, which is fine, but it was, some of them were praising Jesus, and then the other ones were condemning, mainly the focus was abortion. Some of the stickers were just very insulting to those who don't feel that abortion is something that you should be condemned to hell for. And that was my thought in the car, is I thought, you know, what bothers me the most about this display is the fact that you are very separatist. You're very separatist. There's no love on the back of this car. It is the, I am loyal to the idea of this religious leader, and I am condemning my peers that I live amongst, and I think that is so wrong. I think that if religion makes you a better person, then I'm all for it. If it makes you an asshole, then I'm not for it. And I have not been back to church. I was born, or raised rather, in the Disciples of Christ, which is like First Christian Church, Central Christian Church, anything that has that chalice on it, that is the church I grew up in. But I've been to Methodist, and I've been to, I don't know, Lutheran, I guess. I've been to that church before. I've not done Baptist because I had friends that were raised Southern Baptist. My baby mama was raised Southern Baptist. No way. It does not fit with my beliefs, with all due respect, because of this condemnation that I'm talking about. I've had people say, well, you should come to this church and that church. And I've gone to a Episcopalian church. You know, Katie and I struggle with how to raise our son because we both suffered the same injustice as being gay in a church and amongst church families who have rejected us. There's still positive emotions with what we loved about the church and the teachings of the church and the religion itself. And we want to expose our son to that. But at the same time, we have been very hesitant about joining a church. We have visited churches. We've gone to church with him. And it's so hard to pull that trigger. It's so hard to join a church with people that you know in that church do not support who you are. Because my philosophy is I am never going to voluntarily put my son anywhere where they're going to tell him that his mothers are going to hell. I'm never going to put him in a place where somebody is going to traumatize him or piss him off, whatever level degree of reaction he has. I'm never going to do that. Going back to my biggest pet peeve is that your feeling is it's my way or the highway. Either you're just like me, or I'm not going to have anything to do with you, or I'm going to organize and go into a community in a different country and introduce my ways to those people, but eventually force these people to do exactly as I say because it's my way or the highway. And it's this rigid thinking. It's the rigidity of it, because there's a fear that if you don't do exactly as you're told, and if you aren't rigid, then you're going to hell too. Because I remember being taught at some point that other people's souls are on my head, and if I don't convert them, then I'm going to hell too. I'm responsible for that. And I just, the older I get, the more I find it funny. I find it funny because I'm sure, and I know that there are plenty of Christians out there that are not rigid thinking and who practice what they preach or are preached, but they're not the vocal ones with all the bumper stickers on the back. It's the PR campaigns. It's the representatives of the current Christian church the Methodist Church, that just a couple weeks ago went through their big voting and decided again because of the gay issue. If you wonder why gay people don't like church, it's because we are attacked by the church. We are focused on by the church on a national level. And I believe it was the Methodists just a couple weeks ago that divided their churches and made their church leaders of the individual church choose which side they're on the gay issue. 2019. The churches are still dividing themselves over the issue of my being gay. And so how am I going to take my son into these environments? Because this is the sentiment that's still out there. And it just bothers me. Bothers me that I see it, that we, you know, here we are as a nation. I think I saw a statistic where suicides, and it was coupled with something, and I don't know if it was gun violence, but suicides, more people are dying of suicides, and I guess it was gun violence, than car wrecks. Car wrecks happen every day, and more people are injured or killed by suicides. We're an unhappy society. And as much as we want to take sides, as much as we want to stay in our lane, as much as we want to do all these things, we're unhappy doing it. The further apart you pull people, the unhappier they are. We truly are a happier society and a happier people if we are working together. Statistics show it. If you just study the entire, if you study everything and everything I've talked about when it comes to separation of the classes, separation of the races, and now let's talk about sexual orientation. Like, what is the end game? What do you think you're going to win? That's what I don't understand. If you were somebody who can't stand other people because of something stupid like all the things we've listed, what do you gain? What do you win? What do you win? Who's the referee? Who gets to give you the trophy? Like, who's in charge of the game? And why do you think I don't understand what you get out of it. All we all get out of it is separation. And it's killing us. People are unhappy. They're taking their own lives. They're hurting each other. They don't give a shit anymore. They commit crimes. They don't give a shit. You know, again, back to Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman. They don't give a shit about other people. They want their kids in there. Whatever it costs. Whatever it costs. Whatever damage it does to my child. Whatever an asshole I'm making my child become. It doesn't matter. I want in there. This whole me, 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 selfish, 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 me, me, me. And we don't care. We don't care that other people, we've gotten to the point, we don't care. We just don't give a shit. And it's not only that we don't give a shit, but I notice in other people that they've lost complete hope that it'll ever change. I'm not at that point. I've never been that kind of person. I've never believed that things don't change because I'm telling you, they always do. They always do. Again, history shows they always do. Change always happens. So we're in charge of which direction that change comes in. Are we going to allow change to happen in the negative? Or are we going to allow change to happen in the positive? Because it's coming either way. Life is more like a river flowing than it is this stagnant thing. What kind of world do I want for my son? By my not going into church, I'm contributing to the separation problem. And by Katie and I having these conversations about how are we going to go back, we're making progress. So it means that all of us are going to have to overcome our own prejudices and irritations and figure out a way to work together. But nobody wants to make the first step because it's almost like, well, the thought comes to mind, like, I don't want to go in knowing that I'm going to be the first to make the peace treaty and you're still going to look at me across the pew and think, well, you know, that boy's got two mothers and, you know, it's a shame that they're going to hell. But then again, should that be my concern? I'm just trying to protect my son from anybody saying that to him. But then again, if I raise my son in a place where he's secure with us, he won't give a shit what somebody says about us, right? So it takes work on all of our parts. Nobody is innocent in this game. But we got to do something because we're continuing to go down this path of people not giving a shit about each other. We got to start giving a shit about each other. And we got to figure out a way to do that. Now, today's quote is something that I posted on Facebook. She Persisted Show, if you go on Facebook and search She Persisted Show and add the show to it because that helps you find us faster. But there was a quote I put on the show's page that has been the most popular thing that has been on that page ever. And it's from our Congressman Ocasio-Cortez. And she says that, I find it revealing when people mock where I come from, saying they're going to send me back to waitressing as if that is bad or shameful. It's as though they think being a member of Congress makes you intrinsically better than a waitress. But our job is to serve, not rule. And she hit that shit on the head. And that right there is a class issue. Thinking a waitress is beneath you is a class issue. Thinking that the garbage man is beneath you is a class issue. Thinking that the person who cleans your house is not as important as you are is a class issue. I don't believe in any of that. I believe that anyone who cleans my house is more important than me because they're doing a service that I can't provide for myself. And without the sanitation department, it's a whole different issue, but I contend that the sanitation department is one of the most important departments in our society. To alleviate us of our own waste is a huge service and one that should be revered, not looked down on. Again, class issue. I challenge myself. I challenge you to take care of yourself. And I say it with more firmness this week because by making you happy, you will treat other people better. By making yourself sustained, both health-wise, money-wise, joy-wise, you will treat other people better. It is not the outside influence that is the important thing. It is the inside influence. And people who are assholes are people who are insecure. People who are assholes are people who are unhappy. I truly believe that. That the best people in our world are the ones who aren't paying attention to how other people treat them. They are paying attention to how they treat themselves. And So it is vitally important, even if you're a mother. For me, I have got to take care of Melissa before I can take care of Mr. Carter. I have to, because then I will never take care of Mr. Carter. If he sees me as a strong, independent woman, making my own money and treating other people with respect and taking care of my friends and taking care of me and being happy and restful and laughing and enjoying the things that I do, then I'll make a good man. But if I'm exhausted and trying to tell him how to be and tell him what to do and tell him what to say and tell him all these things while I'm sitting there being miserable and stressed and overworked and underappreciated and complain about my life, then I'm going to make an asshole. And I do think the people that spout hateful speech or people that have been told to do that and they don't know any better, they have never worked on themselves enough to understand that that's not something they want to do. You've got to find your own voice, ladies. You've got to find it. You've got to make sure that you are taking care of you. You have to call the ambulance when you're sick. You have to go to the doctor when you're sick. You have to demand that your husband give you soup or make you something or stay home with those kids when you're sick. Don't be the mom who's like, I'm fine. I'll just do it myself. You cannot be the person who says men can't do it. You can't be, you know, I tease about men being babies when they're sick, which they are. However, that does not mean that you don't get to be sick. It doesn't mean that you don't get to have them take care of the children when you're sick. You have got to take care of you, and you have got to start by doing that, and then the people around you will follow your lead, okay? Do something special for you, just you. Find joy in your life and focus on it and keep focusing on it and make sure that your whole day becomes joyful, and then you will treat people around you better and the people will treat you better. Because sometimes I think when people are assholes to me, I have to look about, okay, what did I display to them too? Like, how am I responsible for my surroundings? How am I responsible? If I'm not getting what I want, then what is my responsibility in that? And too many times it's everybody else's responsibility. So everything I just said, everything I've talked about, every separatist ideal that we see comes from that person not being happy. And if you display the same thing, and my criticisms of the church, I've got to work on that, because obviously it's something that I am not at peace with. And I've got to make peace with that. That's my responsibility. It's okay to make observations, but it's not okay to just dwell in them and not do something for yourself, okay? She Persisted Show, Facebook. We are also online, shepersistedshow.com. You can always find me on Facebook, Melissa Carter ATL, ATL for Atlanta. 1L, 2S is in Melissa. Also on Instagram, Melissa Carter ATL. I posted some cute pictures from my birthday, some cute pictures of my son. I don't show his face on social media. I don't. I protect my son from that, but I still try to, you know, artistically show him without having to show his identity. And I hope to hear from you. AskMelissaCarter@gmail.com is my website, is my email address. And I appreciate you being here. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Say, this is Mr. Carter.
This is Mr. Carter.
And you're listening to?
Listen to?
My mom.
My mom.
On She Persisted.
Just from 6 Uh-oh.